everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to a new episode of Talk Back. I'm your host, Calvin Moore. And this time around, I've got Reach Records recording artist Andy Minio on the line with us, with me today. So, Andy, thanks so much for hopping on the line with us.
Absolutely, my friend.
Always good to catch up with you. We've talked one-on-one, face-to-face before, but we've never actually got to get on a phone interview. So this is kind of cool. As of press time, your new album, Heroes for Sale, has just released.
Yeah.
It is a fantastic album. I'm loving it. I think that this is just some very, very cool stuff, a nice new direction for albums from Reach Records. So talk a little bit about, for people who don't know who you are, before we get into the album, talk a little bit about who you are, because for some, it's like, okay, you're the guy who sang on some hooks and then you released some mixtapes, but they don't really kind of know the backstory of who you are. So who is Andy Minio?
That's always a daunting question. Because it's like, go ahead, you got about 30 seconds, tell everybody your life. Yeah.
No, you only have 25 seconds. I don't know what kind of show you're on, but
I wasted. Yeah, man, I'm just I think the way you answer this question probably tells a lot about what you think about yourself too. But anyways.
Yeah, you can be as smug as you want. You can be as smug as you want.
I find my identity in being a college graduate and blah blah blah. No, I'm a 24-year-old dude. I currently live in Washington Heights, which is uptown Manhattan. I grew up in Syracuse, New York, which is central New York, and the way that I got down here to New York City was I decided to go to college at the City College of New York. Came down here, fell in love with the city and the hip hop thing. And then I saved when I was about 14, and man, the Lord's been doing a work in me ever since, and I've been just combining my love for hip hop and Jesus and, creating music and building a following of people who, are also urban, love God, love hip-hop, and I've just been seeing the growth of that for the past few years.
Cool. Now, I remember a few years ago you were using the moniker C-Light, and you came out with a little mixtape EP called Sin is Whack, and that was my first introduction to you. And I remember thinking, this guy's got some talent. It would be cool if, he got in touch with some other people so that, more people knew about who he was. Then, boom, find out, hey, you're on Reach Records. So, that was kind of a big deal. I was like, wow, that's kind of cool. But in one of your songs, you talk about going from, sleeping on a mattress to having three different record labels, basically kind of vying for your attention, trying to figure out, hey, you want to sign with us, whatever.
Right.
What's it like? What was it like going from essentially, I guess, a regionally recognized artist? I mean, people know you in your neighborhood and maybe a little bit around the state and maybe a little bit out of the state, to being on a nationally recognized label, touring all over the United States, if not the world.
Right.
What's that been like? What's been the adjustment for you in all that?
Yeah, it's been a wild transition, man. A wild transition, and one that is I'm really grateful for. I think one of the coolest parts about what has happened is not only that I've gotten an opportunity to make music full time, right, going on to a record label, and kind of making that my full time, just the people that I get to be with, I get to be around Reach Records crew and staff and artists who are just incredible leaders, Christians, just incredible people in addition to being extremely talented. So the transition has been amazing, man. If I had to do it all over again, I would make the same exact choice to be where I'm at. Because I also think, Reach Records is very grassroots, movement-based, and independent, and leaves a lot of room for guys who are creative and also have convictions to be able to follow those, as broadly as they would like to. You know, or you know what I'm saying? Like there's no restrictions in many ways to the methods we want to use and to what we want to talk about and where we want to spend our money and you know as far as marketing and business wise and all that stuff. So it's exciting to be a part of what the Lord's already been doing through faithful guys like Ray and Tripp and KB and Derek and Tabashi have all, you know, been laying the groundwork before me.
Now is it weird that all that happened and now you're also, I mean, you've done a lot of features and you're featured on a Grammy winning album at this point. Is that kind of like surreal for you? Like, whoa, my song's I'm on a Grammy album.
Yeah.
Do you get a Grammy too? Do you get like a nice little trophy?
No, they might send me a piece of paper or something. I don't even know that. But, yeah, man, like, yeah, I guess because it's not my Grammy, I really can't take credit for it, but it's cool
right.
to say, yeah, I'm on there. Some people have been taking it like if they won the Grammy, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're on my Grammy winning now. I'd be like, all right, whatever.
You should start referring to yourself in the third person, too. You should be like, the Grammy.
The Grammy winning rapper, also known as me. No, man, yeah, what a privilege to be on that project, man. Like, it's just amazing to see what the Lord's been doing through Lecrae and, you know, his passion and his skill as an artist. So, yeah, I'm just grateful to be a part of it, man.
Let's talk about you now for just a second. I mean, for sure. A little while, obviously, I'm interviewing you here. Your new album is out. I mean, you released a mixtape to kind of introduce yourself to Reach Records fans formerly known. But this is your first full-length album coming out on iTunes, Amazon Play Store, all those kinds of things where people are going to invest in you as an artist and in you as a minister. Talk about Heroes for Sale. What's behind that name? Why Heroes for Sale?
Yeah. Well, ironically, I end up being depicting myself or, you know, getting really transparent on this album about my struggles and kind of showing the world that I'm not really a hero. You know what I'm saying? That I'm nothing special, I'm nothing great, but I serve a great God. And I think that the title, what I was trying to go for was a bit of a threefold piece. There's a way you can take it, but I think we make heroes out of people that we shouldn't. You know, we put the weight of them saving us or the weight of expectation on them that is unrealistic for frail, faulty humans. We make heroes out of people and idols out of people. That inevitably are going to fail us. And so I used a little bit of satire there to say they're heroes, but they're heroes for sale. They, you know, they come with a price and, you know, it's whatever you're willing to pay for them, essentially, whether it be you pay for them with your trust or, you know, your ignorance. But either way, they're, you know, real heroes aren't for sale. Real heroes are, you know, they've come to save the day for the good of others. So, use a bit of satire in the title, and the other piece of it is that, you know, we try to make ourselves look like heroes. We try to make ourselves look much greater than we really are because we want the acceptance of man. And so, you know, we'll dress up like a hero, the cape, the mask, whatever that might look like for us, and try to earn people's love through that. And the last piece is I think we make God a hero for sale. Like, yeah, we see that you can save the day, hero, but we try to buy you or purchase our right standing with you or bargain with God in some ways as opposed to receiving the free gift he's already given us in his son. So,
Wow. Man, look at you, man. You got, like, all sorts of themes running throughout the album. It's not just hip-hop. It's hip-hop with a message. So I liked this album overall. I think there's a lot of good stuff. And like you said, you were just kind of being transparent, talking about some of your struggles. And so let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you were transparent about, struggling with sin, struggling with pride, struggling with relationship. I know, if I'm not mistaken, you're the only single guy on the label, right?
That is correct.
So you're a single guy. And that comes out in some of the songs here. So talk about writing as a single guy, working with a lot of married guys. What's that dynamic like for you as a young Christian artist who's, I mean, you said, well, you're 24, you're on these stages, you're around, there's lots of beautiful Christian women who are vying for the attention of, you know, the up-and-coming artists, that kind of thing. What's that been like for you as a man? And then how did you pour that into those struggles that come with that? How did you pour that into your music?
I think the Lord has, like, strategically placed me in this season of my life to release this album as a single dude. You get a single man's perspective, but also a Christian, you know what I'm saying, who's wrestling with real, you know, thoughts of, you know, who, like, what do I want? What do you look for in a wife? And how do you ensure, you know, purity? And, you know, like, how do you also just on an everyday basis, you know, just everybody can deal with this. How do you deal with your heart being broken and trying to get over it and not take, you know, the past hurts into the next relationship and those kind of things? I don't think you get that from many guys that are already married. So it's dope that I think the Lord is using my experiences now for them to be translated into music to help other people.
Now we did take some questions from Twitter, and I had a question that came in from a fan that's kind of along these lines. And so as we're talking about this, Emmy Martin, Emmy Martin on Twitter, I'm just looking at this on my screen here, asked the question, what advice can you give people who are waiting on God's timing to find the right person? Because you're in that season. So what advice can you give to people, or what counsel can you give to people who are waiting on God's timing?
Keep waiting.
There you go, Eddie. Keep waiting.
It's essentially it, man. But not to be harsh or whatever, but you know, like I think it's natural. It's okay for us to long for a spouse or companionship. I think that's the way God's hardwired us. I think if you don't wait on God's timing, since I know it can sound cliche, but if you don't. You can speed up the process yourself by going and finding someone that'll fit your mold, and forcing things, and not being in prayer about those things and not, you know, considering, how to do things the right way, which would be, you know, in your community, in your church community, bringing this person around, getting to know them in safe spaces, where you're not alone all the time, but you're letting them be introduced to people in your church, in your small group, and, you know, letting people speak into your relationship who love you and not just running off solo and just finding some cute dude or some pretty girl that makes you feel good and you're not taking those precautions to guard your heart. I would say wait for the proper time, man. And also see your singleness as a gift. You know what I'm saying? Like, you won't be single forever. And I think a lot of people waste time moping over their singleness and spending moping about how they're single when they could be using that time that they're moping and you know, to go and serve people. You know, like, you have so much time as a single person that you can redeem for the glory of God. And you know, the end goal of life is not to ultimately be married and just be married. Like, that's not the end goal of life. The end goal of life is to know God, to enjoy Him and make Him known. And I think there's plenty of ways you can do that as a single person, and a lot of ways, in ways that you can't when you're married. You know what I'm saying? So take those, take those trips. Go do radical things for God. Serve Him, and maybe along the way, as you're running towards Him, you'll find someone running at the same pace you are towards Him, and that might be your companion.
Cool. Now, you released two singles before the album dropped. You released AO, and there's a video for that as you're just kind of skateboard. What is it with you and skateboards? I love this, but I'm like, I don't know anybody who skateboards anymore. So I think it's kind of cool to see you skateboarding through like the entire video. You had that, but then you released, and that was kind of fun and fancy free and seeing kind of the neighborhood where God has called you to be. And then you dropped a second track, which was, if I'm not mistaken, it was a re-up of a track that you'd released before called Bitter.
Right.
And I remember hearing that for the first time years ago, and then it was really nice to be reintroduced to it. again. But I'm gonna take a question from Twitter here from Scott Sotomayor. He asked a question because this is what the song is about. Has your relationship with your father ever hindered the way you view God? And obviously, you know, we don't want you to bad talk your dad or anything like that. But given that's kind of what spawned this track or birthed this track, that's a pretty good question. Has your relationship with your father ever hindered the way that you see God?
I'm sure it has, because I think all of us deal with that view of, you know, if I have an earthly father and God is supposed to be my heavenly father, you know, just the synonym in those words, you know, the correlation between those words is going to make me, you know, make some kind of connections to those things. So I'm sure it has. You know, this isn't necessarily a therapy session. I couldn't go into it. But I'm sure in some way it has. But also, my dad wasn't just really around very much. So in a lot of ways, him being absent was in some ways a benefit. Because, you know what I'm saying? Because I wasn't, it had negative things came from him not being there. But also, I think things could have gotten worse from him being there.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense. So,
I understand intimately what you were saying.
So. Yeah. So in some ways, there's a lot of God's grace all in it. But man. Like I don't hate my dad. I don't wish the worst for him. None of that stuff, man. I think God has given me a heart to exercise grace, and it's not a grace like a one time. Hey guys, look, it's all good now, and you know.
Right.
I'm not bitter. It sucks that you are. A lot of that song was just saying, I don't want to be, even when I am wrestling with it. Because it's not like a, oh, Jesus saved me. That's it. I should just totally love him now. And then it's
right,
over. It's,
right.
It's it every day, every time that phone rings, every time I see that number, you know, an opportunity for me to be reminded of grace and to be reminded of forgiveness. And, you know, the Lord's still working with me through that. So.
Dude. That's honest. I mean, I've been there. You know, my dad was in the house. Again, not therapy sessions, so I'm not going to tell all my business either. But my dad was in the house, but he was emotionally absent. So it's like one of those things, like his parents left. So his way of showing that he loved his kids when he got married was he came home from work. But it was like he's gone to work all day, and then he comes home and goes right to his room. And that was it. But we were... you know, we were provided for. So for me, growing up and thinking about God and hearing, you know, God is your father, God, you know, Father God, those kinds of things definitely affected the way that I viewed God. Now that you know, like you said, it's everyday grace, and you grow up and you understand certain things about who your dad is, and then you also ask for, you know, God to kind of, you know, show you his grace so that you can show others grace, others who you feel should have been there or weren't there, and those kinds of things.
Sure.
So I'm definitely feeling you. Our stories are similar, but dissimilar. But let's talk about the track "The Saints," though. All my transitions are hard here. They have like let's move from talking about something like that to talking about this awesome track over here. Talk about "The Saints," because I'm just kind of old school. I mean, if you just released an album of 16 bangers, I'd have been fine. I don't always need lots and lots of depth. Sometimes I just want to, you know, be able to roll the windows down and annoy the person next to me at the stoplight. But I love "The Saints." Love that track. Love the hook on it. You know, "When the Saints go marching." Who didn't sing that as a kid in church?
Yeah.
Talk about crafting that track and featuring label mates KB and Trip Lee on that track. What was it like putting that track together?
Yeah, I actually remember vividly when we were, I had the beat, and I was on tour at the time, and I remember we were in Virginia, I think, and I grabbed KB and Tripp, and me and him, you know, we had been talking about, on the tour bus, Tripp was saying, yo, man, you should do a song with me and KB and you, because, you know, we did it on Tripp's album, and people loved it. And he was like, man, people really love that, John. I think it'd be cool if we did another one. And so I was like, yeah, man, for sure. I think I got the beat. So we went to the back, you know, the green room area, and I put the beat on. And I was like, man, I can see this being a record with all of us on it. And I was already talking through the music video. I don't even know what the song was, but I was like, I could see it being something kind of to deal with, you know, the army or like the, you know, it's because it got that trumpet at the beginning. It sounds almost like boot camp. I could see a video of us being at a boot camp together or something. And Tripp just said, how about when the Saints go marching in? And I was like, yes. And just kind of in that green room right there, that little concept sort of sparked. And so later on the tour, I set up in a hotel room. I rented a hotel room and put the mattresses up. Y'all might have seen the picture.
I saw that picture, man. I'm sorry. That was so awesome, but so hood at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, my God, are those mattresses? That's so funny.
Yeah, man. You got to make it work where you can.
Yeah, you got to make it work. Get it where you fit in.
Yeah, we set up in that hotel room, and we recorded the choruses there for the Saints. And, you know, that was part of my... Yeah, part of the journey, we got it done there. And so that ended up just becoming, you know, a favorite for people because they love KB and Tripp. And I think it's a fun song, man, a hot lot of energy. Shout out to G-Rock for producing it. Killed it.
Now you got to have a way to – you got to find a way to get just random hotel mattresses in the video. I don't know. That's
yeah.
It's got to be there now.
I'll talk to my guy, see if we can work it out.
Be like, that's for you, Calvin. That's for you. So talk about some of the other features, because I think, I mean, KB and Triple E and, you know, Lecrae on Uno Uno Seis, those are kind of expected. Swoop and Kristen Gray are kind of coming up. Those are kind of expected as well. But I was King and Country, unexpected. Very unexpected. And then I'm not sure... The list I have in front of me doesn't show someone being featured on track 9, Wild Things, but it's kind of got a heavy metal vibe to it, screamo vibe. Was somebody featured on that album and just not I didn't get the information on that? Or
no, that was me screaming.
That was you screaming. Okay, cool. That's you. But you also have a feature with Chris Calico, which is interesting in and of itself. Talk a little bit about you... connected
with
last names. Say again?
You're no good with last names.
Did I mess it up?
Calico.
Calico, see?
Yeah, Chris Calico.
I put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. I'm sorry.
Calico?
This guy ain't hip-hop. No, anyway, but how did those... I'm not even going to try to say it now. You got me all self-conscious here. You got me self-conscious, Andy. how did those... those features come about for you?
Yeah, so for King and Country, my kind of music director who oversaw the project with me, his name is Joseph Kralosny. He produced track 1, actually, with Dirty Rice. He's a monster. He's the one who takes all of our stuff and, you know, adds little string pieces to it or arrangement elements and kind of oversees each track to help, you know, as a producer to help put things together. So he is very well connected in the kind of Christian music scene and is just close friends with For King and Country. Mm-hmm. And so we had a record and I said, you know, it'd be great if we got these guys on it. And he said, yeah, let me call them up. And, you know, they're obviously smashing right now with that song. Let my life be the proof of your love, right? So they're smashing right now and they came through and did an amazing chorus for me. And I was like, wow, this is a great fit for the project. So we didn't get to connect on that personal basis yet, but, they really believe in what Reach is doing and you know, want to be a part of that. So got to connect with them on that record. Then also, Chris Calico is he's from Strange Music, which is Tech N9ne's label. Mm-hmm. And I was out in, where were we? We were in Kansas City, Missouri, and I know that's where they're from. So I shot Chris Calico. I'd been paying attention to him for a while because I've always been a Tech N9ne fan, always liked Chris Calico stuff. And I heard his last album, Kicking and Screaming, and I heard a lot of references to Jesus. I heard voicemails of people praying for him and his songs talking about his spiritual struggles and stuff like that. And I was like, yo, I think this dude might be a low-key Christian or, you know what I mean? He might be, you know, processing through the Christian faith. So I was like, let me reach out to him. So when I was in Kansas City, I said, hey, what's up, man? I got tickets for you for this concert. Love to connect. He was over in Europe on tour at the time, but he said, you know, he's going to send his wife through and stuff like that. So He said people came, were really blessed by the concert, and he wanted to connect more after, so we exchanged numbers, jumped on the phone, started talking through stuff, and he ended up being, you know, an appreciator of the music and the movement, and just wanting to build and connect. So we've been connecting more, and it's been great to have those behind-the-scenes relationships, you know what I mean, beyond music, to just be able to call dude a friend and build with him. So, yeah, that's how that song came about, and I think the song is perfect, called Tug of War, talking about feeling like you're in that in-between place. And I share some of my testimony on there, you know, when I was in that in-between place and felt like I was being tugged in two directions, to either follow the Lord or to continue on the path I was on.
Now,
so I think it's a great record.
Now, what I love that kind of honesty and the fact that you're able to reach out to those who are kind of processing through the Christian faith or, you know, playing around the edges of it. Because, I mean, you saw the great, you know, partner with quote-unquote secular artist, and then he was on BET, and now you've got a secular artist on your album. But there's a line drawn from Wild Things that I really liked. The lyric says, I talk about Jesus, all the Christians love me. I walk like Jesus, now they want to judge me. And I just know, and you and I have talked about this offline, face-to-face before, that people see one thing, and they're like, oh, they shouldn't be doing that. And they want to write you off, or they say that's sinful and don't ever engage you as to why you're doing what you're doing. They want to just judge. It's easy to judge. It's harder to have a conversation, I think.
Sure,
so
absolutely.
Talk a little bit about where that, I mean, that line doesn't sound bitter. That line sounds true.
Sure,
So talk a little bit about where that line came from for you.
Yeah, I think Jesus, I think one thing we're all attracted to is his deity, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's able to move, you know, he's able to still the water, walk on the water. You know, he's able to feed 5,000 with a Lunchable. He's able to do all kinds of incredible things. And we love his deity. We love his deep words, love thy enemy, so on and so forth. But then we look at the humanity of Jesus, you know, enjoying wine with his buddies and kicking it. You know what I'm saying? When he goes and he, that's the Jesus we don't like. No, alcohol is bad. It's terrible. Jesus didn't really do that. Yes, he did. You know what I'm saying?
It says it right there. I don't know what else you want to say.
It was really grape juice. No, there's a word for grape juice in the Hebrew, and there's a word for freaking wine, alcohol and wine. And he was drinking it. So, you know what I'm saying? That's the Jesus we don't like. And then, you know, the Jesus who goes and hangs out with tax collectors and sinners and invites them to have a meal, you know, invites himself over to their crib to eat a meal, you know what I'm saying, and to talk with them. What? We don't like that, Jesus. That's too close. You know, that's too uncomfortable to hang around with people who need help or people that are all jacked up or people that are, you know, hurting. So, Jesus hung out where the wild things were. You know what I'm saying? He was where the hurting people were. He was also, you know, with obviously his disciples and those who already believed and followed him. But he wasn't afraid to interact with prostitutes and to interact with tax collectors and sinners and people who were written off as, you know, like the drug dealers of our day. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Or the tax collectors
so,
of our day. That's still a profession nobody wants to be in.
Yeah, exactly. So I see Jesus going and doing those things, and in a lot of ways we have created in our American theology, like, stay away from these people because they're not like us. And in fact, that should be call us to draw nearer to them in wisdom. You know what I'm saying? Obviously not
Absolutely.
Just like, oh, I'm going to go to the strip club where all the strippers are. You know what I'm saying? Just hang out there. Obviously that's not exercising wisdom if you're not able to deal with that environment. You know what I'm saying? If it's going to cause you to sin. But what might be, you know, is to find out if there's any of strippers who live in your building or drug dealers or whoever, and befriend them and share the gospel with them. And, you know what I'm saying? Invite them to dinner as Jesus did and allow them to see your community, you know, do life with them and let your life speak to them and don't just proselytize them. Don't just throw a track at them and, you know, on a 10-foot stick, pass them a track and be like, stay back until you read this, you know, like, let people in, walk as Jesus walked. And I think as I do that, as I build relationships with guys who aren't Christians, a lot of the Christians are picking up stones to say, see, I knew it. You just wanted to blow up. You just wanted to become some famous rapper, and you don't care about the gospel or Jesus. You just want to make friends with the A-listers and XYZ. And we're like, yeah, there's a mission here. We want to influence culture. We want to do that by you know, getting it in with people who influence culture.
Right.
It doesn't mean we're sell out or, you know, but people don't have the full perspective. They just know what they've been told. They know what they
right.
see, which is a tweet or a song. They don't know all the conversations and the things that are happening behind the scenes, and they can quickly judge because of those things, and it's wrong.
But if I
jump on a song and I talk about Jesus, Jesus is Lord, Jesus is, you know, true, Jesus is pure, Jesus hates sin, everyone's like, yeah, of course. Don't think that's true. So they love you if you talk about that, but they hate you if you try to walk like Jesus in some ways because they don't understand it or don't see the full story.
Yeah, and I think that's a major adventure in missing the point. Major adventure missing the point. And I want to keep talking, but I know your time is precious and my time is precious. I got a lot to do. So I'm just going to kind of wind down here, but I want to know where can people find out more about who you are? I know there's reachrecords.com, obviously, but do you have anywhere else that people can find out who you are and where they can get your music?
Yeah, man, you nailed it. ReachRecords.com. Also on all the social media sites, everything is /AndyMineo. AndyMineo. Mineo. Super simple.
Is it AndyMineo?
Yeah, AndyMineo. Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr. If y'all use that, you know, it's all there. Instagram, AndyMineo. Yeah, keep up with me on social media and YouTube, and you know, you'll see videos and documentaries and stuff up there, and you know, you should, you'll do your research and figure it out.
All right, cool. Well, Andy, absolute pleasure being able to catch up with you. Again, love the album. Hope it sells like gangbusters. Not just because, you know, you got to feed yourself. I want you to be fed, but I do love the theme of this album. I love the message of the album and the songs, and it's just great quality music, great lyricism, and I think people need to be exposed to better art, and your album is better art on a number of levels. So thanks so much for creating this for us.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate that, man.
All right. I'll talk to you later, man.